You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Fire and Chill. You might remember a few weeks ago, we actually joked about doing another housing episode since it's everyone's favorite topic. I was actually only joking. A little did I know that we'd actually be doing one, but we have to, and that's because we have some big news, and that is that Pat has bought a house. So, So essentially what's going to be happening today is I'm really just going to interview Pat and ask him all the questions that I'm wondering and that you guys are probably wondering too. We'll cover his house buying experience, why he decided to buy a house, where he bought, and how this affects his financial independence plans, and lots more. I've got tons of questions for Pat today, so let's just get stuck straight into it. Pat, can you let us know what's happening? Because this might seem a little bit out of left field for some people, since you're always, well, it seems like you're always ranting about property. So what's going on, mate? Give us the spiel of what's happening.
I've realized the error in my ways, Dave, and I've decided that property investing is the only way to invest. No, clearly not. That hasn't happened. So yeah, I've bought a property, which I intend to live in at some point with my partner, Stephanie.
So you don't hate property? Should we clear up that? Is that a misconception that you hate property?
That's a massive misconception. I hate investing in property. I still don't like investing in property. But in terms of somewhere where you want to live, you weigh up the costs and the benefits and you make a decision based on that.
And there's a lot of non-financial things that come into play. So buying a house to live in is a lot different of a decision than buying a house as an investment property.
Correct. And even if it's not an investment property, there are still financial considerations outside of it being an investment, which I'm sure we'll go through in some further questions.
All right. So what's the deal, mate? Have you been, is this just something you've done spur of the moment? I can't really imagine that. Or is this something that you've been planning and doing for a while?
Yeah, this is definitely something I've been planning for a little while. Steph and I have actually been looking for a property for over a year now in our chosen, call it areas, a few suburbs down in the Illawarra, which is probably an hour to an hour and a half south of Sydney.
Okay.
For those of you who don't know. And it's just been an incredibly slow market in this little pocket over the last year and a half, to the point where a property that Steph and I would actually be interested in would probably come up on the market maybe once every 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, so, wow. And is that because your criteria is so specific, or there's just very, very little for sale in that area, or what's going on there?
A combination of both, really. So the areas we were looking in were quite small, let's say. Like, we wanted to find a house in very specific suburbs, in very specific areas. But it still wasn't like we were aiming, like we were only looking for houses in a couple of streets wide. Like, we were looking in a group of about 3 suburbs. It would have covered quite a large area. But I think as of last year, when COVID hit, all of the home sellers just got completely spooked and no one was putting anything on the market. Only people who really had to really put their properties on the market. And it just made it a very drawn out and painful buying process.
Yeah, I think the COVID situation really sparked a bit of fear because there was so much uncertainty around everything that was going on. So people were pretty reluctant to move or to sell if they didn't have to, which makes sense.
Yeah. So we were like right in there. Like we had a deposit ready. We were willing to buy during that whole COVID period. But it was just, we didn't find much that we liked. There were a few properties we liked, but we missed out on. But we eventually secured one.
So I suppose the next question is, we've covered where you bought. So why did you choose that location in particular? What kind of things were you looking for? And what was your property criteria, essentially?
So firstly, being outside of Sydney was a huge criteria. I don't think Steph and I had any long-term dreams or plans to live within Sydney. The Illawarra is where Steph is originally from, so it's a bit closer to her family and friends, which made it an easy choice. We could have moved north of Sydney, we could have moved west of Sydney, but going south made a lot of sense because that's where her family and friends are originally from. In terms of like specifically what we were looking for in a property and location, we've actually bought into what I would call a sort of unloved beachside suburb. Mm-hmm. It's becoming more and more loved as the years roll by. I think people are starting to realize that there's not a lot of reason for the property in this area to be as affordable as it is. And I think mostly just like a freestanding home on a quiet street that isn't near any arterial roads or main roads. We didn't actually care if it was a sort of older property that needed a lot of love or if it was a newer property that already been done up. As long as if we did go for an older property, it was a bit cheaper to give us some room to move.
Yeah.
But in terms, we weren't that specific on the property itself, as long as it was sound
and the
price was right. Yeah.
And is this like kind of close to the beach or close to the shops, or what other things did you want to have in the property?
Well, it's pretty close to a beach.
Walking very distance? Close.
Walking distance.
Ah, excellent.
Which was a big plus for us. It wasn't an absolute must, but it definitely added to the appeal of the property.
Is this the beach that you're going to be lounging the rest of your days on when you eventually stop work, Pat?
Yeah, exactly. Every day, go for a quick morning swim, head back to the house. That's it, really. I don't know what else we weren't that picky, I think.
Okay. All right. What about the thing that everyone's probably wondering? What's the kind of price bracket that we're talking about? And also, did you get any of the first home buyer benefits? Because you haven't owned a property before.
No first home buyer benefits. We were above the price bracket in which would be available. So that was unfortunate, maybe. And that already gives everyone a bit of a clue about where we're looking at. But
what's the limit for? Because it's different in every state. What's the first home buyer limit in New South Wales to get any sort
it's
of benefits?
800,000.
Okay, so you're a little bit above that.
We're above 800,000.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Below a million, okay. Above 800.
You didn't hit the seven-figure threshold.
No, we didn't hit the seven-figure threshold.
Okay.
But that was why we chose the area in part, because we could get like an amazing family brick home, very good quality. This one, it wasn't like a beat-up one, very close to the beach. For under a million. Mm. Like anywhere in Sydney, this would have been several millions of dollars. Yeah.
Huge difference. I was just curious, do a lot of people that, because you said it's an hour from Sydney, so do a lot of people that live in this area, do they commute to Sydney? Or is it mostly local people, they work in and around the local area?
A lot of people in the area do commute to Sydney. Maybe not quite where I bought, but just north of Wollongong and within Wollongong, plenty of people commute to Sydney for their work.
Yeah,
whereas I'm a little, not quite Wollongong, a little further.
Hmm. And so you mentioned that you will be moving in at some point. Do you have any rough plans around that? So are you planning to quit work entirely and then move there, or semi-retire to that location, or what's your thinking around that?
I'm thinking in a sort of 2 to 3-ish year time frame, and it would probably be some sort of semi-retirement at that point. Yeah, and in the meantime, we'll just rent it out, unfortunately.
Wait a minute. You're going to rent it out. You know what this means, Pat.
I know what this means.
You've fulfilled your dreams of becoming a property investor.
At least now when I rant about it, I can do it from a place of experience instead of just theoretical rants.
Yeah. I reckon this home buying story is just a facade, mate. I don't reckon you're going to move in at all. I reckon you're going to buy another one after this and just start accumulating real estate.
Oh, yeah. That's always been the plan. Just lie to everyone to make property cheaper for myself.
So that's it. No plans. Just a short-term investment and then you'll be moving in a few years' time.
Yeah, definitely. No plans to buy further properties.
We'll see, mate. I'll be watching.
You're going to pay attention. Hold me to account.
All right, so how is this going to affect your financial independence plans at all? Is it going to push it back a little bit? Is it going to bring it forward a little bit? Or does it change your savings rate at all after owning this property?
Yeah, look, we definitely paid a bit more than we wanted to, but we decided to go ahead with it just because that's where we wanted to live and the property was nice and it ticked all the other boxes. So that is definitely a bit unfortunate. We might have to think a bit more about delaying our fire plans or extending like part-time work for a bit longer, something along those lines. And that's the way I'm heading. Perhaps, like I said, move down in a couple years' time, reduce hours dramatically, make up the difference that way until we can go full fire.
So it's definitely not a big kind of deal breaker for your original plans. It's just slight modification and a slight drag on what you were on path for before.
Yeah, precisely. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that, like, I'm pretty fortunate. Steph's pretty fortunate. We can well and truly afford a property in this price bracket. So it's not a huge imposition upon us where we are now with our salaries to buy a house in this price bracket. It'll just, like you said, delay it a year or two.
Yeah. And so you were saying that you had to pay more than you expected. Is that because there was a lot of competition at the moment? You want to talk a bit about that?
Oh, Dave, it was painful. It was...
Painful how?
I've never seen that many people at a property.
So this one that you bought, what, the home open was just flooded with people, was it? Or do you mean in general before this happened? Both.
Last year when we were looking... Like, we were pretty new home buyers, so we were pretty naive. So we didn't really understand what a hot property market looks like and what a subdued one looks like. So when we'd go to an open house and there would be maybe three or four people or three or four couples looking through it, that just seemed normal to us. Start of this year, we saw one property in early Jan that so many people, like, it was unbelievable, would have been dozens of people through the house. And this property, again, just dozens and dozens of people. There was a line outside the property to get in.
Sounds like a Perth rental property right now.
The real estate agent told us that they had 17 parties making offers on the property.
Wow. That's a lot of competition.
It was quite literally insane. I don't believe what's happening to the property market at the moment. Mm. Like, everyone's come out of COVID and they've just decided they want to buy a property immediately.
And when you've got rates that are 2% or even less, you can afford a lot more property than you could a year or two ago.
Oh, yeah. I was like the only person in Australia not hoping for rates to go down. Like, when the rates kept getting pushed down, I was like, oh, no, stop it.
Because automatically that means more buying power and competition for you with your house purchasing. Yeah.
Yeah, correct. Mm. Correct. So I saw that happening and I wasn't happy. Nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, 2% rates is just like rocket fuel for borrowing and property,
Everyone's getting in on the action. Like,
but now you're in, mate. Now you're in. Now you can talk it up. Now you can encourage everyone else.
I don't care. I'd be happy no matter what happens.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it's a home purchase. So if it goes up, great. If it goes down, doesn't matter. Like, you're there for the long term. You bought it as a house, like as a lifestyle or consumption choice rather than a investment or like a safe place to park your money. It wasn't done with that in mind, was it?
No, not at all. The only like sort of financial thing that came to mind was just hedging against the property market. So this was the area I wanted to live in. I didn't want to come in 2 or 3 years' time and find that I couldn't afford it or I wasn't willing to afford it. I bought now with the intention that whatever happens to prices, it doesn't matter to me.
Because you've locked in that price, and then that the price stays the price over the next 30 years of your mortgage, or however long you choose to keep a mortgage, yet your price doesn't change.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And it's the same sort of thought process that goes between buying and renting. You're locking in a house cost. and whatever happens to the rental market, whether it goes up or down, it doesn't affect you per se.
The only thing that would affect that is interest rates and your mortgage repayments.
Yeah, correct. But that's a whole other story about paying down your mortgage quicker or investing instead.
Yeah.
It's a risk and return story.
So I suppose let's talk a little bit about mortgages. Did you guys have a pretty big deposit or a small deposit? Because I suppose the trade-off is the bigger deposit you put down, the more cash that's tied up in your home, whereas if you put down a small deposit, you can have more invested in shares. So which kind of option did you go for? A really big deposit or a tiny deposit or somewhere in between?
Well, this is going to surprise a lot of people, I think. You remember from my early days, like I was investing in a few shares and then I just couldn't sell them because the capital gains tax was just too horrific.
Mm.
So we'd saved up roughly a 10 to 12% deposit or something. But then when it came time to apply for the loan, there was an option of paying like an amount in LMI or copying the capital gains tax, which was roughly equivalent to what LMI would have been, and just selling those kind of cats and dogs from my early years and using them to make up the rest of the deposit.
Okay. So people who don't know, LMI is Lenders Mortgage Insurance, and that's a fee that you'll usually have to pay if you're deposit when you're buying a property is less than 20%. So if you buy with a 10% deposit or a 5% deposit, you'll usually have to pay this LMI, which protects the lender against you defaulting on your mortgage and the banks losing money. So it's a fee that you're required to pay. And it's often $10,000 or more, depends on the size of the loan, but you can usually attach that onto the top of your loan, but that's a fee that you have to pay. So you've chosen to clean up your portfolio a little bit, sell a few of these odd bits and pieces of shares and bump up the size of your deposit.
Yeah, because it ends up being cost neutral versus LMI. So
okay.
I get to clean up my portfolio, avoid the LMI. I didn't want that much exposure to these individual stocks anyway. They were just hanged around because I didn't know how else to deal with them. And I didn't want to cop the CGT until I was on a lower tax bracket. But this sort of made it a sensible option in my case, I think, too.
Yeah. You didn't consider going for the, or applying for the government's, what is it? The government will, the government will essentially cover the LMI up for a certain amount of people each year for first home buyers. That's the case, isn't it? But the spots are limited.
Yeah, look, I did look into it. I think I earned too much again.
Oh, is it income specific?
I think so. Okay. I didn't look too closely into it. But it's also not something that every lender will do. So you're still locked into certain lenders and certain rates and that sort of thing, even if the government will cover the LMI, so to speak.
Okay.
So you end up paying more for your loan anyway, if that makes sense, because you've
through a higher interest rate?
Through a high interest rate, yeah. So I just thought, nah, it's probably not worth it, even if I was eligible, which I'm not sure I am.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And in terms of interest rates, we spoke a little bit earlier when you were looking for a house about different lenders and different interest rate options. So what did you end up going with? Because I suppose in your situation, you guys are quite a high income household. You have no other debt and you have a pretty large share portfolio. So I would assume that you could basically get a loan from any lender out there. So what did you choose to go with? Because so the ball's really in your court.
Yeah, precisely. So we've actually gone with an online lender. I think TikTok Home Loans.
Mm-hmm.
No affiliation to the weird video service, by the way.
So this social media platform now does home loans, hey?
No. Very unfortunate for this lender.
Different TikTok.
Different TikTok. Yeah, and they have really low rates. I think they have a really transparent process. And the reviews I read said they're very quick to process things as well, which was probably important to me as a first home buyer. I didn't want to be waiting for the big wheels of a large bank to turn.
Yeah,
but let's speak a bit more about variable and fixed rates, Dave.
Okay.
Because when I was standing in the position, a few things came to mind that we didn't discuss last time. So whenever you go on a fixed rate, at the end of the fixed term, you get rolled over, right, to a variable rate. Now, that variable rate you get rolled over to, it's not really clear what that's going to be at the start of your fixed term. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you can't know what the variable rates are going to be for any loan within the next 2 or 3 years.
No, you can't. However, this is going to get a bit complicated.
Well, they can also change the variable rates they charge on each specific loan at any time, because they usually have a standard variable rate and then a quote discount, this mythical discount that they apply onto each Correct. Different loan product that they have. Is that kind Correct. Of where you're going with it?
That's kind of where I'm going with it. I've done a bit of research. So when a bank locks in a rate with you, they're locking in a set amount of funding from like another bank or from like bank bill swaps. I'm not an economist or anything or a financial guy, so I'm not totally sure how mm-hmm. it all gets locked in. But they essentially lock in a base rate for you. And then that base rate goes up and down based on RBA movements and based on other funding parameters that they need to work out. But that base rate you get locked into is pretty important to how much your loan is going to end up costing you for the life of your loan. Because if you get locked into a higher base rate to begin with, then it moves up and down from there instead of starting from the lower base. So I started to think about, where do we see loans going in the next 3 years, like the standard variable rate? Do we see them going up? Do we see them going down? Or do we see them staying roughly the same? And this is quite important to the decision of whether I choose fixed or variable, because if I'm retired, I can't simply refinance because I will be a lending risk without a full-time income, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So this means it affects my decision to go with a lower fixed rate to begin with, because a lower fixed rate for 3 years might end up in a higher variable rate for 27 years.
Yeah, you might end up stuck because you can't refinance later.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Correct. And I was seeing like TikTok's website, and they have this pretty fancy graph showing like cohorts of borrowers from time regions and what their starting rate was and where it's moved over time. And this kind of pretty accurately illustrates what I was trying to describe in words there for our listeners.
If we can find that, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, correct. And so what I'm getting at with this is, in 3 years' time, I think it's pretty maybe likely or probable that interest rates won't be as low as they are now. Do you think that's likely, or do you think that I shouldn't be making those sort of wide assumptions?
It depends which rates you're talking about.
The RBA cash rate.
Yeah, okay. You can't know, of course.
No, you can't.
Everyone who's playing this game is effectively just guessing. I would not expect rates to be much different in either direction in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I don't know which way they go and whether that's even correct, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But why? I was just wondering, you could make that decision regardless of whether the rates go up or down, because it usually tends to be the case that if you get a fixed rate, it might be attractive now, but the variable rate it rolls to is pretty unattractive. But whereas the lenders who have attractive variable rates right now might be a bit more expensive than the fixed rates at other places, but they'll be much cheaper when you compare the variable rates of both places. They'll have very attractive variable rates. So you could make that decision independently of whether you thought rates were going to go up or down.
Yeah. I'm also just trying to figure out what TikTok's roll to rate is, like how it's calculated, but it's not very clear. So I'm going to have to make this decision in a vacuum, so to speak.
Actually, we didn't even discuss. So what have you actually chosen? A variable or a fixed?
I'm still trying to make the decision. Like, I'm going back and forth with the credit guy and just like,
oh, okay.
Try and tell me what the roll to rate is going to be. And he's like, oh, we can't know. It moves, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I get that you can't tell me the number. But is the roll to rate going to be the rate that you're offering new customers in 3 years' time? Or is it going to be the current variable rate adjusted?
It won't be the new customer rate. You can guarantee that. The new customer rate is 99% of the time is always better than the current customer rate.
This is what I'm getting at. I'm not convinced that the new customer rate will be better in 3 years' time.
Yeah, but
I think funding is as low as it's going to be.
Yeah, but if the new customer rate moves up, then the standard customer rate also moves up.
Not necessarily.
Why wouldn't it? The funding's going to come from the same place if it's current funding for current variable rates.
No, that's not how... Well, that's not how TikTok has described it on their website.
Okay.
That's... Yeah. It's a complicated question.
Okay.
And it's made far easier if you have some mobility. But like I said, if I'm retired without a paid day income, my mobility isn't high. So I need to lock in the interest rate of least regret now, so to speak.
Yeah. So it could even be better going for a variable rate that's attractive and with a lender who doesn't have a history of jacking up their variable rates and offering consistently attractively priced variable rates versus going for a super cheap fixed rate for the next 2 years, because then you might end up stuck on a higher variable rate later. So if that's a concern, I'd probably go for a super whatever good lender you can choose where you've already chosen, but with a variable rate that's consistently attractive relative to the rest of the market.
Yeah, that's the way I'm leaning. If I can't get any more information out of TikTok, then I'll probably just go with the variable rate, which is pretty good. It's 2.19%, but it's not like the crazy 1.89% that you're seeing.
But still very, very cheap.
Yeah, still very cheap.
All right, so probably spent enough time on interest rates there.
Yeah, I don't know. There was just more things to it than first comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. Okay, so in terms of looking forward, when you do move into this property, what is it that you are excited about and what is it that you are looking forward to when you get this new kind of lifestyle happening and live in this property?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the bit of extra space. I'm looking forward to making adjustments to the property. I know this is a bit of an in vogue thing, like DIY home renovations. But that is something I am definitely looking forward to, being close to like bicycle tracks and the beach and that sort of thing, because this will be close to like lots of really nice bicycle tracks, which will be really nice.
Yeah.
Looking forward to not having to live in an apartment block, I'll say, or a small apartment block.
Just in a congested and cramped location.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you mean. It'll just feel a bit more open and a bit more free to live in an open space.
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually thinking, I haven't lived in a place with a garden for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years now.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that.
Yep.
So that would definitely be nice.
Hey, just a bit of a side note. You know how I was looking at some property, I don't even remember, last year, was it? I had a look again, and there's, I don't know if it's the same in your location, but over here in this particular suburb that I'm in, the larger the land size you go, the better the value is. So it depends what the size of the blocks are in each location. But you can get a house on a block of land that is maybe 5 times bigger than another house on a block of land, but it's only 2 times the price. And so it ends up being much, much better value when you look at it. It ends up being quite expensive. But when you look at it like that, it actually works out to be a lot better value. So did you look at different options like that, different sizes of blocks and whatever? Or was it just in this location, every block is almost more or less the same size? Did you flirt with different ideas of sizes and stuff like that?
Early on, we thought we would. But then when we realized how slow the market is, that was one of the things that we just thought, oh, we can't be so picky about this thing. We need to look at properties of varying block sizes if we're going to have a chance. Because remember I was telling you not a lot of properties came on the market. If that was another criteria of ours, then there probably would have been like one house in the last 2 years that met all the criteria. That was not an option. And just more generally in and around Sydney, Dave, there are no blocks that are larger than 500 square meters that aren't immediately going to be bid to the moon by developers.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
If you're going for a block that's, say, 700 square meters or more, you're competing against developers who want to put townhouses on it.
Yeah, okay.
Which knocks you out because they're looking at, like, the profit margin and they can easily make a few a few hundred thousand doing that.
They got bigger pockets.
They got bigger pockets, They know they can make profit even if they outbid you on just the fundamentals of the property.
Yeah, what they can turn it into.
Yeah, they're bidding on what they can turn it into, whereas you're bidding on what it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. What about renting? Is there anything that you're going to miss about renting or being in Sydney or anything like that?
Yeah, good question.
Having things fixed for you without having to pay for it.
But that happens so rarely. Like, I don't...
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. That's true.
Like, how often does something actually break around here? Nothing. I can't think of a thing, really. Like, when we first moved in, we got them to come in and seal up a few gaps between the windows and the wall. That's good quality Sydney apartment construction there. Gaps between the windows and the wall. Jesus. But that's it. Like, that's the only time we've actually... And we've lived here for over a year, so, yeah.
So you're not going to miss anything about renting or being in the city?
At the moment, I don't think so. That might change, but we'll see.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so what about... We got this question in our email about offset accounts attached... obviously attached to a property that you own. So now that you own a property, will you open and keep money in an offset account now that you've got somewhere to store cash that's not going to earn you 0%?
Yeah, we will. The amount of cash we'll put in there to begin with, probably equivalent to 1 year's expenses, let's say, for us.
Yeah, yeah. That's a decent amount.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, 40 to 50,000, something like that. Maybe 50K.
And just to be clear, is that more cash than you would keep normally because you now own a house plus, so that comes with a bit more maintenance and whatever, but it also means that cash that's sitting there is not earning 0% anymore. Is there a few reasons why you would do that? Because I don't think you would normally keep that much cash, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I suppose the thinking would be that moving into a plan in 2 years' time, like shifting towards that plan where perhaps we're earning less money from our incomes, it just makes a bit more sense to store a bit of cash to work our way toward that. So the idea would be that if we're earning less from our incomes and we've got this huge chunk in the share market, we'd want a buffer in cash to deal with emergencies or perhaps even remove some of the interest rate movement shock that might occur or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's mostly due to you moving towards a semi-retirement phase more so than because you own a house.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, okay.
Like in terms of paying for things in the house that might go wrong, again, I'm not... Yeah, I'd...
That would pretty much come out of monthly savings at
It'll
this
come
stage.
Out of monthly savings at this stage, exactly. I still don't think we're at the stage where we need to keep tens of thousands of dollars on the sidelines for an emergency, whatever that might be.
Yeah, fair enough. So is there anything... That's pretty much all the questions I had for you and what I can imagine people would want to ask you, but is there anything that you want to share about the house buying experience or anything else? Is there anything you noticed when you were going through the process, even now or before, that you noticed people don't really speak about much? Anything you came across where you're like, huh, that's odd, no one really mentions that?
We learned pretty quickly, but... Something that doesn't get mentioned much at all is that if you're interested in a property and you go to an open house, you pretty much have to put an offer in immediately. And you pretty much have to go to the first open if you want to be in with a chance. That's just where the property market is. If you're thinking, oh, look, it's open. We'll go to next weekend's open. Forget it. Forget it. Or if you think, oh, we'll wait till Wednesday to make an offer. Forget it. Like, you go to an open house on a Saturday that... The agents have offers within a couple of hours of the open house being finished. So that's something to maybe keep in mind.
And you can probably gauge it depending on how many people are there.
Yeah,
if exactly. There's a lot of people there, you can tell there's going to be a lot of interest, so you have to move fast if you are actually interested in it.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually went to 2 open houses for this property. And the only reason we went the second time was to gauge the popularity.
Okay.
It was like to see if it was still going nuts.
Was it popular both times?
Yeah, it was.
I think sometimes...
Oh, and another...
There you go.
Another little tip that I don't think many people... Well, no one does as far as I can tell, but it's something that Steph and I came up with. Often agents will say, okay, final offers by this time, and then we present them all to the owners. So sometimes they're not being completely honest there and they'll still take offers after that time.
No. No.
But other times they're actually genuine. Oh, this is the final time for offers. If you don't get it in before then, we're not accepting them.
But that's not always the case?
That's not always the case. But however, like we found it really odd that people always put in their offers in round numbers. So someone will put in an offer for $750 or $755 or $760, So Steph and I always put in offers for 751, 756, or 761.
Oh, yeah, man. Because, like, that round number stuff, that's amateur hour. You can't do that. Otherwise, you can win the property just from an extra $500 or $1,000. Yeah, you got to go a bit extra, yeah. Or you got to go odd numbers, yeah.
Go and just go like one up and you'll find that you'll be more in the running most of the time.
Yeah, it can make a big difference.
It can, which is surprising that more people don't do that.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that or read that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they got to do that, man. Is that what you did for your offer that you put in? Was it an odd amount?
Well, actually, we got the whole, we're taking final offers by this time, and then bidding continued after that time.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Is that just because they can, well, I suppose they can take bids up till that time, and then they take them to the owner, and then the owner says, oh, let's leave it open a bit longer? Maybe that's how it works? I'm not actually sure.
I don't know how it works, honestly.
They might just be like, let's wait another 24 hours and see what comes in. We might get a bit more.
Yeah, let's just juice this as long as we can. Let's see.
Yeah.
Just what I think happened. But anyway.
Yeah, okay. So you happy with it anyway?
Yeah, definitely. And it's also good to just have that certainty, because housing was always a big uncertainty in our fire plan, which we had to account for conservatively and like always umming and ahhing about how it would work out. But now that we've locked it in, we have much more certainty about how much it's costing, what we'll need to do. We can formulate more definite plans about our finances.
Yeah, that makes sense. And now you don't have to listen to the people who say, you can't be financially independent unless you own a house.
Well, I still have to listen to them.
No, you don't, because you're at that stage now. So you've just proven them right. So then they think, see?
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. The property buying experience is pretty straightforward, really. You go to open houses, you put in offers, you get a conveyancer, building and pest sometimes, but not even everyone does that.
Did you do that?
Nope.
You didn't do it?
No.
Did you put any conditions on there at all?
It was so popular that the vendor was unwilling to accept any conditions for building and pest. So a bit of a risk, but I had a look around. I'm an engineer. I couldn't see any problems. I had a quick peek under the house.
No gaps in the windows or the walls?
Didn't see any gaps in the walls. Didn't see any major settlement issues. Didn't see any mold. Didn't see any, like, timber borers or termites or anything like that. So I was reasonably confident.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, mate. Congratulations on the purchase.
Thank you.
And I suppose I've got one last question. Does this mean you'll stop ranting about property now?
No, I mean, it's still crazy. Just because I bought into the craziness doesn't mean I don't think it's crazy. It just means that I realize I have no control, or I understand that
it isn't going to dissipate.
What I think. No, it might dissipate or it might not. I just understand that that is unknowable to me.
And if you want to buy, you have to accept the market as it is, not how you wish it was.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, that's pretty much what it came down to. This is the market. If we want to buy, this is the game we have to play. And we just accepted it. Like, you can't stubbornly hold on to your price anchoring or your hopes and dreams. You just have to play the game as it's presented to you, or decide that you don't want to play that game. Yeah. That's it.
It's hard to approach a home purchase with an investor's mindset, saying, no, these prices are irrational. I'll wait until prices fall X amount, or I'm going to try and buy it below market value and whatever. You just be waiting forever.
Yeah. The market timing makes a fool of all of us. Isn't that the saying?
All right. So I think that's about it today, mate. What do you reckon?
Yeah. That's it.
All right. I just want to thank you for being so open and honest about the experience and answering all my questions and sharing your information with us. It's been interesting for me, and I'm pretty sure it's been interesting for everyone listening too.
Yeah, cool. No worries. I hope it helped some people. And if you have any more questions, just let us know. We'll be happy to answer them in the next episode, maybe.
Yeah. And did you know that Fire and Chill is now almost 1 year old? How crazy is that, Pat?
Woohoo!
We're only, about a month or so away when this episode airs? A month and a bit from being 1 year old. So it's our podcast birthday.
That is great. Kept this alive for a year. That's great.
Yeah. It hasn't died out.
Hasn't died. We haven't got too busy. We've got plenty of listeners. The listeners are actually going up, which is great. And yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for continuing to download.
We appreciate all your feedback and support, and thanks for listening and making sure we're not just talking to ourselves. So it's been a lot of fun. So we look forward to bringing you more podcasts as the year rolls on. And make sure you subscribe in your favorite podcast app wherever you listen, and to get new episodes as soon as they come out. And you can also listen to the show on our blogs if you like, strongmoneyaustralia.com and lifelongshuffle.com. We'll talk to you next time.